The National Cabinet is made up of the Prime Minister, Premiers and Chief Ministers, all putting their heads together to provide a joint approach to COVID-19. It's been quite a success. And today, the Prime Minister has indicated that he may seek to continue the forum once the crisis is over. Greg Barnes is a member of the Australian Lawyers Alliance and he doesn't think it's such a good idea. He told The Wire's Sarah Martin that while it's been good to see members of the Territories and Commonwealth work together through the National Cabinet, he doesn't see it as a replacement for COAG or the Council of Australian Governments.
I don't think that anyone can really draw any conclusions about the lawmaking process and law reform from a particular set of circumstances that do require Premiers and Chief Ministers and the Prime Minister to work harmoniously. Once we get into peacetime, if I can use that expression, there's a very different dynamic at play, and it is important that there be full parliamentary scrutiny of legislation and policy. And if the National Cabinet is established as a means of bypassing that, then I think that's quite dangerous.
Do you think the National Cabinet's done well to respond to community needs during this pandemic?
To a large extent, speaking from a lawyer's perspective, there has been success in ensuring that steps are taken under public health laws to make sure that there's compliance with public health warnings and with the sorts of behaviours that are required to minimise risk. Having said that, we do know that there have been concerning abuses of power by police in various jurisdictions, and this is more at the state and territory jurisdiction than at the Commonwealth jurisdiction. And I think it also has shown, though, that there is some confusion when a National Cabinet meets and decides to pursue a particular course of action that then gets interpreted differently in each state and territory. And so the National Cabinet, I think, has a relatively confined role as a lawmaking entity during this crisis, and most of the application of that lawmaking has been done by the states and territories.
On that, the additional crackdowns that have happened, do you feel like some of those are going too far?
I think the concern is some of what has happened to date has been clearly abuses of power by police forces in the way in which they've misinterpreted what are really woolly laws in any event. They're not going through the traditional parliamentary process. They're directions from public health officials, and often they are open to interpretation. The other issue which is emerging, of course, is this idea that we ought to increase surveillance if we loosen restrictions to ensure that COVID doesn't re-emerge. And so it's those sorts of proposals that we would have a concern about, particularly the proposal overnight that there be an opt-in process where people effectively would have all their movements tracked through their mobile phone. That is quite concerning given the lack of protection in Australian law for privacy. So they're the sort of consequences that come out of COVID-19 that we need to be very, very aware of and need to make sure that human rights are respected.
Do you think the Australian public is prepared to push back on those at this point?
Well, we did see the Australian public push back on the My Health records to a large extent. I think there would be some pushback, and there ought to be some pushback. We don't have proper privacy protections in Australian law. We don't have a constitutional Bill of Rights where people can assert their rights to privacy and have them enforced. And, you know, on a day when we've seen the AFP's search warrant against a media organisation struck down in the High Court, we know that the AFP and other organisations at the Commonwealth Government do exceed their powers. And I think people should be very concerned about handing over the capacity to be surveilled, ostensibly for COVID-19, but who's to say that that surveillance won't be used for other purposes? Recent history tells us it will be.
Are the public aware of the dangers of these slow creeping controls?
Organisations like ours and the Law Council and others have certainly been working hard to make sure that the community does understand the risks with these sorts of large-scale surveillance powers being handed over to government. On the other hand, I think some people at this point would say that it's a good idea, it's a public health issue. If there can be safeguards put in place so that the information can't be used for nefarious purposes or ulterior purposes, and if there was some sort of effective watchdog, and if we had a national Bill of Rights, there wouldn't be the same concerns. But unless those sorts of protections occur, I think you'd be very unwise for Australians to allow this sort of mass surveillance without having legislation in place where you have proper protections.
Would we also then face a challenge if we wanted to unravel those controls later on?
As a number of us have said, the history of after 9/11, for example, saw Australia pass now almost 80 pieces of anti-terror laws. some of which have draconian consequences, and some of which just allow, for example, detention without charge, control orders, a whole range of orders and controls on human conduct and human interaction which were unthinkable prior to 9/11. The difficulty is that people are obviously concerned about COVID-19. They want to stay safe and they're prepared to cut the government some slack. And that's probably the right thing to do. However, the issue now is that we need to be very, very sure, one, that there's proper scrutiny of government, two, that there are limits to the powers that are being used in relation to COVID-19, and three, be very careful in establishing precedents that can then be rolled out across other parts of the community for a more general purpose, such as surveillance.
Greg Barnes is a member of the Australian Lawyers Alliance. He was speaking with the Wire's Sarah Martin.